the essence of Krishna consciousness is to please Krishna. In everything we do, everything we say, everything, every thought from our mind should be an offering of devotion for the pleasure of Krishna. And Krishna explains so wonderfully in Gita, through Bhagavatam, how he is most pleased. How we can awaken that internal realization of pure devotion. In Krishna consciousness, we have a path that must be followed very strictly. But the purpose of following the path and the goal of following the path is that internal realization of devotion, unalloyed, unconditional devotion. Manmana bhava madbhakta madhyajin namaskuru mam evaisya shishatyante pratijani priyoshina. With a pure heart to always think of Krishna, to become his devotee, to worship him in every aspect of our life, and to offer our humble homages to him. This is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. So we must simultaneously perform our services very carefully. But we must strive with all of our capacity to perform our service in the proper internal consciousness. After all, we are a preaching movement. But Srila Prabhupada explained, unless we are very carefully chanting the holy names according to the regulations he has given us, 16 rounds, Maha Mantra, unless we're properly associating with Vaishnavas, following the regulative principles, unless we're regularly reading his books and hearing the philosophy of pure devotional service from sincere devotees, it is impossible for us to perform our other services in Krishna consciousness, in the right consciousness. Our sadhana is the foundation of our spiritual life. We should know that when we want to construct a building, the first and most important factor is the foundation, because it gives permanence and stability to everything else we build upon it. We can build a glorious, wonderful, lovely building that the whole world adores, but if it does not have a strong foundation, when the storms come, it all falls to the ground. And then no one cares anymore for our wonderful building. So similarly, we may get extraordinary results in our particular service. We may be the best cook, or the best book distributor, or the best pujari, or the best cleaner, or the best host for guests. We may be the best seamstress for the deity's clothes. But if the and the whole world of devotees may honor us and glorify us and appreciate what we have done, but if we are not sincerely chanting the holy names regularly, if we are not sincerely serving the devotees, if we are not sincerely hearing Bhagavad philosophy regularly, then we have a very weak foundation. And it is just a matter of time till, through the storms of Maya, all that we have built collapses. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada was very, very careful to warn us again and again that the stability of each devotee in this movement, and the movement as a collective whole, is depending on how carefully and conscientiously the devotees are chanting the holy names of Krishna, attending Srimad Bhagavatam class or reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and following these basic principles of sadhana. But that's not all. After we perform our sadhana very carefully, we follow these basic principles of Krishna consciousness, then it is our service to work very, very enthusiastically to assist in the various projects of this mission. Because after all, just to have a beautiful, solid foundation is not enough either. You have to build something upon it. Our sadhana is to prepare us for devotional service. It is the essence of devotional service when these things are combined properly. Because through this process, gradually, our original natural love of Krishna is awakened. And Srila Prabhupada explained, it is in the Upadeshamrita, that he has gone through great, great sacrifices and struggles to establish temples all over the world. And the purpose of all of these temples is to give people the opportunity to learn the process of associating with devotees and exchanging loving relationships amongst devotees. And therefore, it is our most sacred duty to Srila Prabhupada that we can create this atmosphere in our temples. Prabhupada wanted the temples to be like an oasis in the desert of material existence, where there is so much exploitation. He wanted these temples to be a place where people could be relieved from the anxieties of material manipulation and quench their spiritual thirst by associating with devotees. In the world outside, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said it is the place of the cheaters and the cheated. Everyone is very quick to exploit one another, even in the name of love. People are very quick to love someone who facilitates their sense gratification and turn against somebody who impedes their sense gratification, and even destroy them if necessary. Dog-eat-dog world. When people come to our temples, they should not sense that phenomena. They should actually experience the reality of Srila Prabhupada's books. When devotees go out to distribute Srila Prabhupada's transcendental literatures, they learn of a lifestyle which is free from pride and greed and envy, a lifestyle where people's hearts are united in the loving service of the Lord. And the purpose of all of our temples is to give people the opportunity to see how it is a reality, how it is practical, that Krishna consciousness is a positive alternative to the exploitative lifestyle of material existence. But in order to create that atmosphere, we ourselves have to transcend, through our great endeavors, the various temptations that Maya brings to create doubt, confusion, and mistrust amongst each other. And this is actually the greatest service we can perform, because it is through this that the essence of Krishna consciousness will certainly be realized. If we analyze all the problems that come between devotees, are petty, insignificant, inconsequential and useless. And the one principle that we have to agree on under every circumstance is eternal and infallible. So we have our choice of on which level we're going to relate with one another. And we always have to keep our minds fixed on that eternal, infallible principle which is meant to unite us. And we should take in disregard all of the petty, superficial reasons why we should quarrel or distrust one another. Because they are all based on the false ego. So to keep the purity of the temple consciousness, the most important thing is that the devotees come together in the congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna. This is the Yuga Dharma, the Sankirtan of the holy name. When we come together for kirtan, we should come together with great enthusiasm. Our enthusiasm will enthuse others. We should be inspiring one another to take shelter of Krishna's name. Our joint effort of performing beautiful congregational chanting is so pleasing to Krishna. And it is the greatest power to purify the entire world. And the quality in which we come together to perform kirtan should actually be the prominent focus of our lives. Because this is the Sankirtan movement. And there are different varieties of Sankirtan. Prabhupada explained that everything we do is Sankirtan. Why? Because everything we do is ultimately aimed at bringing people to the congregational chanting of the holy names. But the culmination is when we come together to chant the holy names. And the spiritual atmosphere of the temple is very much dependent on how devotees take this very seriously. If we're too lazy to come to kirtan, if we have other priorities in our lives, if we have so many other services that it is not possible, then we are actually defeating the purpose of Srila Prabhupada's great sacrifice to establish these wonderful temples. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us this gift, and we must be very eager, very enthusiastic, and very determined to accept this gift. So this is so important, although it is so simple. Kirtan is so simple and so joyful that sometimes we don't take it seriously. We think that something very difficult is more important. But there's nothing more important than the congregational chanting of the holy names in this age of Kali Yuga. And then we must perform our devotional activities and develop relationships amongst one another in such a way that when we do come together to chant the holy names, it's in a united spirit of devotion that we can offer at the lotus feet of Guru and Gauranga. Guru Maharaj said, Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated. This is the simple process of Krishna consciousness. It is the perfect understanding of Krishna consciousness. That Krishna is in his name, and Krishna can reveal everything to us through his name. but we have to approach the name in a spirit of humility and a spirit of being the servant of the Lord and the servant of his devotees. If we just learn how to serve Vaishnavas, if we just learn to chant the holy name in this spirit, there is no power in the whole creation that can impede our spiritual progress or the success of this mission. But if we complicate our lives with so many other considerations, then that will create a tremendous obstacle in our spiritual progress. The essence of Krishna consciousness is to love Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us the simple, sublime process of awakening our love for Krishna. Srila Lochandas Thakur has prayed in this way. Kevala Ananda Kanda. That this process is simply joyful. Chanting, dancing, and feasting. One time Srila Prabhupada was explaining how all we do is chanting and dancing and feasting. It's simply a joyful process. And then he looked for the devotees and he said, isn't this all we do? Chanting, dancing, and feasting? And one devotee raised his hand and said, Srila Prabhupada, what about all the other difficult things we have to do? We have to take cold baths, and we have to get up early, and we have to go out and distribute books, and we have to do some, we have to clean, and we have to cook. Prabhupada said, no, all we are doing is chanting, dancing, and feasting. And then somebody else said, but Prabhupada, what about? And he said, no, all we are doing is chanting, dancing, and feasting. And then Prabhupada looked at everyone and said, so what are we doing? And everyone said, chanting, dancing, and feasting. It is true. When we learn the secret of developing wonderful relationships amongst devotees, as we have been explaining throughout the day, of learning how to be the servant of the servant of the servant, and coming together to congregationally chant the holy names in this spirit, then we understand that everything we realize, that everything we do throughout the entire day is just a wonderful extension of this wonderful process of chanting, dancing, and feasting. This is the essence of Krishna consciousness, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has revealed to us. It is the essence of all religions. It is the conclusion of all transcendental knowledge. It is the perfection of all the longings of the eternal soul, because it is the means of reconnecting eternally with Krishna through pure bhakti. Would anyone like to ask questions? If there's any questions, I can try to answer. Speaker should not speculate. Of course, if someone is living outside of the temple and they sincerely are reading Srila Prabhupada's books, then that is very good. But we understand from what Prabhupada says in his books the very, very special and important virtue of hearing in the association of devotees. There is a special potency. And that is why Srila Prabhupada was very, very diligent that there be a Srimad Bhagavatam class every single day in each of his temples. If it wasn't so important, why did he establish it with such enthusiasm? Why didn't he just... He did tell devotees that they should chant his book, that they should read his books. In fact, he desired that devotees, if they had the capacity, would read his books for several hours every day. But he also insisted that they attend Srimad Bhagavatam class. Because that congregational setting of discussing the philosophy of his books is very, very potent to reawaken the spiritual inclinations within everyone's hearts, and it also creates an atmosphere of uniting everyone in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And that unity is meant to be extended to actually push forward the mission. Because Srila Prabhupada explained also that united we stand and divided we fall. He gave the example of one fable where there was a bundle of sticks. And to try, as long as the sticks were all wrapped up together, although each one of them was very thin and frail, the unity of all of them together, no one could break the bundle. But each and every stick, if taken out separately, could easily be broken. So Srila Prabhupada explained in this way to us, that individually, Maya can break any of us to pieces in a second. But if we are united in Krishna consciousness, there is no power of Maya that can harm any one of us. So, the congregational chanting of the holy name, we can also chant japa alone. That's also important. It's essential. But so is kirtan. We read Srila Prabhupada's books alone. That is essential. But so is Srimad Bhagavatam class. If we want the full benefit of Krishna consciousness, the full power that's coming through this great mission, we have to accept in full. Because when we perform the chanting together, when we hear Bhagavatam together, it creates a unity amongst us, which is very powerful and which is absolutely essential to preserve the sanctity of this mission and to push forward this mission. So we do not say you should do one without the other, we should do both nicely. That is best. Yes? Well, what I would say the best thing to do is we should convince these people by making the association of devotees so wonderful that they want to come. Rather than criticizing them for not coming, we should work amongst the people who are coming, we should work very diligently to create such a wonderful Vaikuntha atmosphere that they want to come. Because by criticizing them, you will not convince them to come. By criticizing them, you'll make them more distant and far away. By telling them that they're wrong and then they're in Maya and they don't understand properly, I doubt if they'll come. They'll probably come less. Correct? So what is the real solution? And that those people who are serious to make the temple a wonderful place should actually not speculate. We should not have political feelings amongst each other. We should actually really put great emphasis on making the temple a wonderful, simple atmosphere, which Srila Prabhupada wanted it to be, where everybody just wants to glorify Krishna and serve one another. And if you do that, if we do that, I believe that so many of those people will naturally want to come again. And it is our service to them, to ourselves, to our guru, to Krishna, and to the world to try to create that atmosphere. And we can do it. Why not? The only reason why it's not like that is because of us. And the reason why it will become like that is because of us. Yes.
I think what you're saying is especially applicable to the leaders of the society. And it comes to Nigerians here, but you're talking about other bodies. You mentioned about going outside, being exploited to teachers, etc. A lot of these bodies have been experienced within a movement from people that are taking shelter of our leaders. And the message we're getting is absolute and absolute truth.
Very good question. I'm also sorry.
It's something I'd like to remember. I'm not just trying to cause some controversy.
No, no, because we are not speaking about any personalities. We are not speaking about any specific situation. And I can't because I don't know any specific situations in this regard. This type of preaching, I believe, should be emphasized on all levels. Because it's Prabhupada's desire. It's Prabhupada's philosophy. It's Lord Chaitanya's will. Mistakes may have happened. Mistakes may still be happening. But still, the perfect process is there. We may not have followed it. Sometimes leaders may not have followed it. Sometimes others may not have followed it. But if we do follow it, then we can achieve the perfection of devotional life. It's there. What Prabhupada has created is there, has always been there, and always will be there. And somehow or other, we all have to strive on every level according to our own individual capacity. We have to strive to simply follow what Srila Prabhupada has given us. We have to strive to create the Vaikuntha atmosphere in our temples, in our homes, and in our lives, which means loving relationships amongst devotees, very pure and sincere sadhana, and dedication to our Gurudev's mission. It's as simple as that. However many mistakes may have been in the past, we still must preach and strive for the same thing. Just like the little sparrow, she was trying to dry up the ocean, and her capacity was one little drop at a time. But because of her sincere endeavor, she attracted the power of Garuda. So we are all little sparrows. And if we all earnestly aspire for the higher truths, then we can attract the great power of Krishna to help. Whatever we are, the solution is the same. There's no doubt that devotees, people in general, follow the example of the leaders. Yadyaracharati sreshtas tadhar evet rojana sayat pramanam kurute lokastara nubharatate. Krishna explains like this. that there are many leaders who are very honestly, sincerely striving to be the servant of the Vaishnavas and trying to push on through the Prabhupada's movement. And there are many devotees in general who are similarly striving. And that is the great hope for real success in the progress of our movement. And if we can all, on every level, from the new bhaktas to the highest leaders of the society, we all have to work on emphasizing this principle more and more and more. It is very important. So very important. Because the question was the importance of peak devotees coming together for the Sunday program. It is important for two reasons. One is, if we want guests to take our movement seriously, they have to see the unity of the devotees who are already dedicated. How can you expect an outsider to take seriously our program if the devotees who are preaching to them don't even take it serious themselves? If we really want to show our love for Srila Prabhupada, if we really want to show our love for Lord Chaitanya and Radha Gokulananda, we will create an atmosphere which will attract more and more people to want to come and take part. And in order to do that, we have to show those people that we love Krishna consciousness. We don't want to bring them to the temple and give them the indication that Krishna consciousness is not very nice, that this temple is not very good. We have to create an atmosphere, and that means participation. That is a very, very important service to Srila Prabhupada, that devotees come and enthusiastically take part and put all differences aside and make it a wonderful atmosphere for the guests as well as for the devotees themselves. Because unless devotees come together to glorify the deities in the service of Guru Maharaj, it's not at all a community. We have to commune with a focus point. Commune means to come together. And the focal point is Radha Gokulananda. It is our sacred duty to them, to ourselves, and to the world to come together regularly to glorify them. And this will solve more of the differences between us than any other arrangements we're trying to make. Because factually, the differences between human beings in Kali Yuga are so deep that it's beyond human capacity to solve. Only the intervention of Krishna can do it. And if we want Krishna to intervene, we have to come before him and beg his mercy. And that's why we come together on Sundays. But Krishna, we are yours. There may be so many differences which are beyond our capacity, but we have come together to offer ourselves as a whole at your lotus feet. And of course, we cannot expect everyone to come, but we ourselves, and whatever influence we have that we can generate upon another, we should influence in this way. And that will make a substantial difference. If the few people in this room take this to heart very seriously, with enthusiasm, the few people in this room really try to develop humble, loving relationships with one another in a service mood, and really develop a desire to have wonderful, wonderful kirtan and wonderful, wonderful joint programs to attract people to Krishna consciousness, it will transform the lives of so many. It is very important. there may be certain problems that you feel are beyond your capacity or your control, but you do have the capacity to follow this principle in your own life and try your best to influence others similarly. And it will make a huge difference. Because in Krishna consciousness, although in one level there's a hierarchy of leaders, on another level, wherever there's devotees coming together sincerely to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's desires, we should understand that Srila Prabhupada's potency will be there. From my point of view, I come to this temple, I see everything's wonderful and everyone's wonderful. I cannot comment on anything beyond that. from the leaders to little Priya, everyone is wonderful. That's my perception. But in principle, we should know that wherever there is that sincere desire to come together, I don't believe anyone is trying to impede that. Wherever there is that sincere desire, it will attract Krishna and Radha Gokulananda's great power. And that is what is required everywhere. Yes?
Maharaj, you were speaking about differences amongst devotees. Recently I was reading some of Srila Prabhupada's letters, and he was emphasizing a principle of establishing in our society the unity and diversity. I was trying to understand a little bit the meaning of it, because from my own observation, we can see there is a solution in this country that is very prominent in amongst devotees in terms of relationships. For example, some devotees, they like to associate with someone, but not with somebody else. They like to open up their mind with someone, but not with somebody else. Because due to the differences in consciousness or personalities clash. So I was wondering, how can we really finding that sense of unity despite all the differences, based on what?
It's based on the higher principle that we have all come to this movement to serve Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. We have all come to share the mission of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. On one level, we may have individual, natural, deeper relationships with certain devotees. And there's nothing wrong with that. That is natural. But simultaneously, we should not deal with any devotee in such a way that is contrary to proper Vaishnava etiquette. We may have intimate friendships with some, but we should be servant of all on another level. We should offer respect and offer encouragement and service to all Vaishnavas. And we should try to develop deeper relationships with as many Vaishnavas as possible. And we should strive for purity in our own lives. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I was wondering, because that's one of the qualities of someone who is striving to become a Mahima from God, that he is more into making friendship with other devotees. But despite that, still there is no personal clash and and incorporate relationships.
That will always be there. But individually, we all have to decide what we want. And we all have to be willing, individually, we have that choice to make this sacrifice of really being a part of the solution rather than being a part of the problem. And then this is a preaching movement. If we preach this principle through our example and through our words, it will create a great transformation in the lives of so many. Definitely. Because the power of Krishna is behind it. Is there any other questions? Yes.
Well, it seems that from the time of joining, the years of my Krishna consciousness, our goal, our perception of the goal seems to change. As well as our taste. The initial enthusiasm may go up, may vary, or is this simply purification, or is this a sign of progressing in the goal?
In what way has it changed?
I think initially when we join there is a question of full surrender. Everyone joins with the concept of giving oneself to Krishna. It seems as we go on we develop our own habits and concepts. And we may even have different goals.
One thing is when we first come to Krishna consciousness, we have no idea of what full surrender really is. We think it's just that we eat prasad and we get up early and we put on tilak, put on a dhoti or a sari and do what we're told. But as we start progressing in Krishna consciousness, we realize that material attachment and the false ego is so deeply seated, and that full surrender is something that is very, very deep and very profound and very difficult. It is not just a superficial execution of certain external duties, but it's a total willing to sacrifice our own ego for the pleasure of Krishna. So sometimes when that reality comes before us, we have to become very, very, very serious. It's not very difficult to become very serious at the very beginning, because we don't really know what we're getting into. But we have to do it, otherwise we just rot in this world birth after birth after birth. We have to do it. But when we understand what it really means to surrender, then it takes a much greater, deeper determination, enthusiasm, and commitment than we ever expected at the beginning. So in this way, sometimes as we progress and as our own inner consciousness is revealed, our perception changes. Also, when we first come to Krishna consciousness, we have a very idealistic perception of all Vaishnavas, that they're all pure devotees. Everyone except me is a pure devotee. And if I'm just with them, I will also become like them. But then as we live with them for some time, we realize that many of them are just like me. They're struggling just like me. They have their shortcomings and their fall downs just like me. And we all have to become leaders in our own rights to help one another to become Krishna conscious. And if we're sincere, that transformation of our perception will also come about. And that is very important. I hope that answers your question.
I'm just wondering on the taste for Krishna consciousness seems to diminish. That's perception,
at least. That might be your perception. But I believe many devotees, it is not their perception. The taste for Krishna consciousness is increasing more wonderfully and greater than ever before. But we should know that oftentimes our taste for Krishna consciousness is based on a particular type of sense gratification in the beginning stages that we are deriving from engaging in devotional service. Huh? But on the higher levels of Krishna consciousness, it's in pleasing Krishna, not in pleasing ourselves, that there's ecstasy. Right? So, in order to actually come to that platform of a complete giving of ourselves for the pleasure of Krishna, sometimes out of Krishna's divine loving mercy, he takes away the taste that we were experiencing in Krishna consciousness for our own sense gratification, and then he says, now are you willing to do it for me? Even though you're not enjoying, are you willing to do it for me? That is where the real ecstasy is. And then we become a little lost because we're used to enjoying ourselves. And then we have to be faced with the reality that actually I'm doing it for Krishna. In that way, if our sadhana is good, if our hearing and chanting is good, if our association is good, we will have the intelligence and the spiritual strength to make that transition. And with even greater enthusiasm, perform our devotional activities for Krishna's pleasure, even though there may be no taste for ourselves. And if we're willing to do that, then Krishna will give us ecstasy, ecstatic love. But as long as we continue doing it because we like it, we'll never enter into that realm of transcendental love. So it's Krishna's mercy so that he takes away that aspect of our devotional service from time to time, just to show us why we're supposed to really be performing our devotional activities, and to test to see whether we're willing to do it for him. Huh? So it's his mercy when he takes away the taste, if we're enthusiastic. And if we're enthusiastic, definitely he will give us a much deeper and greater taste than ever before. Yeah.
My question is a little bit related to the Shodhidharma's question. I understood, just like you did, that sometimes we find devotees, because as a young devotee, sometimes we tend to look up on the behavior of the percent of the senior devotees. And we found that they appear to do very well in devotional service or practical duties. But it's a little bit confusing because sometimes they don't practice in sadhana. So we should take it, you know, like they are on some kind of maybe eternal type of place in Krishna consciousness or Kriyanuga or whatever it is. Or it is not good.
said before, you know, that the sadhana must be there, the chanting in the kirtan must be there, just like we did when we were young devotees. And it appears to be that when we, after so many years, we become really complacent, we don't go anymore to the kirtan, or we don't attend Bhagavatam class, or we do not associate anymore like we did in the past with devotees. So, but even though your devotional service that we do appears to be fine, very well. But like you said at the beginning of the lecture, that the most important thing is the base, the foundation. One of the preliminary subject of the foundation is the sadhana, where devotional service is placed. So, maybe you can elaborate a little bit.
And what?
It could be that there are, you know, high level, like you said, many days, but we are not able to see it.
Srila Prabhupada explains what a leader in Krishna consciousness means. A real leader in Krishna consciousness is one who inspires devotees by his example, or her example. And that is very, very important. And we should find some leaders within our community who are inspiring us on that level and follow that inspiration. Why bother judging others? There must be some leaders within our congregation that are inspiring us like that. And we should seek inspiration where we can find inspiration. And we should respect all Vaishnavas. That is my practical recommendation. But we shouldn't use another person's unwillingness to justify our own. It is said, seek and you shall find. If you really want to be enthusiastic and follow the process, find some devotee, some leadership that inspires you to do so, and be inspired by that, and follow that line. But if you're looking for an excuse not to follow Krishna consciousness seriously, you'll always be able to find some leader who's not following so nicely, so then you can say, well, what's the use? How can I do it? And the fact is, at the time of death, you can't put your finger towards some other leader and say, it's because of him. Because at the time of death, it's a matter of you, not anyone else. You're responsible. You're responsible to have found the leader who's going to inspire you to surrender. You're not going to get away from Yamaraj by saying, but this person was not coming to Mangal Arati every day, so how could you expect me to be Krishna conscious? Yamaraj will say, but there are others who did. Why didn't you? Huh? So we have to understand that Krishna consciousness is a serious business. At the time of death, we're responsible for what we have done. We can't blame others. So therefore, seek out the inspiration that will guide you right. Seek out the leadership that will guide you right, and follow it, and do it wholeheartedly. And for all others, why try to judge? Just respect them and honor them as devotees. But follow those who are real leaders, as Prabhupada explained, by setting the example in their own lives. Yes.
Sometimes it's strange, First, it seems to me that there's a thin line between serving Krishna in that way and false austerity, because that does exist as well, and one could be doing something in self-denial, thinking that, well, there's nothing I have here, but I'm doing it anyway.
Krishna consciousness is simple because we can take instruction and direction from guru, from sadhu, from shastra. Shastra, we accept the Prabhupada's books, is giving us the sasha in a very practical, pure way. Guru, we have our spiritual master, and we get direction, and we understand how we can best serve. And there is also the sadhus, the assembly of sincere Vaishnavas, especially in the who have authority in our devotional service. So there is no need to speculate. We can simply inquire and ask, what is the best way I can serve Krishna? There should never be a time when we don't really know what we're supposed to do. In the association of devotees, in a disciplic succession, these questions should be clear. Simply ask, should I be performing this austerity of great self-denial? Is this what you and Krishna want? Or should I do it another way? And follow. But this devotee also had questions. The best way we can serve Lord Chaitanya's mission is if we can find such leaders right where we are. And I think if you look, you'll find.
Oh yes, that's the two that sounds like the one
program. Well, the definition of a leader that we're explaining is somebody who does that. Does anybody do that? No? Very well, then you should do it. Be our leader. Anyways, if we all come together and decide that we want to do it, then Prabhupada will lead us. I believe that Srila Prabhupada, these projects are so dear to him. The devotees who are willing and who are sincere enough to follow his program will ultimately be the leaders in his mind and in his heart, whoever they may be. And we should try to please him in this way, by inspiring one another in this way.
I was thinking that experience by the preaching. And you can see, like in the temple, where there were buildings that were preaching, and the spirit is there, everything is there. Temples where there is maybe a lack of preaching, and there's a lack of presence. So I'm just thinking that maybe, like many priests, they have to maintain themselves, and maybe the preaching is lacking in that respect. So how can we kind of find a balance between maintenance and preaching?
Practically, in the project that I'm working with in Bombay, I will reveal to you what I found. That it's very, very important to have a very strong, pure, and determined ashram of brahmacharis and sannyasis. Because grihastha devotees, it's very difficult to pass judgment or to place too many expectations upon them, because they have so many responsibilities in so many different directions, especially those living outside of the temple. And grihasthas, whether they're in high positions or not high positions, they are generally very preoccupied with so many other responsibilities. And according to the Vedic culture, it's actually the brahmacharis and sannyasis who are supposed to always be establishing the highest principles of sadhana. And they are the ones who should be actually there to give the light and directions to all grihasthas. Then it's practical, because they have no other business except that. That is their service to the Vaishnava society. They have nothing else that they should be doing. They may have so many other services, but first and foremost is they must establish the highest principles of spiritual discipline. And their example should give courage, should give faith, and should give inspiration to all grihasthas. In Bombay, we have congregation of many hundreds and hundreds of grihasthas. They all have families. And many of them are businessmen, doctors, lawyers, architects, professors. They may not every day be able to come to the Mangal Arati. Some of them do, but some of them can't. But when they see the strictness, the discipline, and the purity of those in the renounced orders, the sadhus, they get so much strength from them. They get so much inspiration from them. They get so much hope from them. And in the Varnashram system, that's the purpose of the sadhus. Now I'm being very honest with you. When the brahmachari and sannyas ashram is very strong, pure, and disciplined, it gives real direction to the grihasthas. And when it's not, it's very difficult for the grihasthas to survive in their sadhana, unless they really have people they can look up to and say, yes, they're doing it. That's what I want someday. And that's what I'm going to strive for. That's our own experience. And we found to the degree the brahmachari ashram and the sannyas ashram is very disciplined, to that degree the grihasthas become very, very, very deeply fixed in devotional service. Because if the grihasthas do not honor the renounced order, there will be a great deficiency in their spiritual future. And that's in our shastra. Throughout the scriptures, we find the greatest Grihastha king devotees from Yudhisthira, Dasarath, and others. We see how they had such love and respect for those and those in the renounced order. That is very important. It's practical. So I would say it is very important at all of our ashrams that we develop a very, very pure brahmachari ashram, and we develop a very, very pure sannyas ashram. And those grihasthas also, who are very sincere in leadership positions, should really take it according to their capacity to be very responsible, to set a very good example. And all of us, basically, have to take it to responsibility ourselves to follow whoever is setting that example in our temple and live by that example ourselves. And to the degree we develop, as we're saying, nice, loving relationships, serving relationships, according to Rupa Goswami's principles, it will simply make the temple an attractive place where we want to perform these activities. So all of these things combined, I think we have to consider very carefully. The balance for Grihastha life, as you're asking, is an age-old problem. And it's really based on our sincerity to want to be Krishna consciousness. If we're sincere to be Krishna conscious, we will make the right balance. If we're not very sincere, we'll justify our ashram as an excuse to not. It comes down to sincerity. But those in the renounced order should really take it as a responsibility to help uplift all others. It's their duty. In India we don't have a brahmacharya ashram.
It's not challenging, I'm just curious, because there are quite a lot of babies in the
world. But the principle is the same. The principle is the same. Yes?
Thanks so much for such a nice in-depth explanation of personality and that. I'd like to ask you a question about physical relationships. Since part of in Krishna consciousness for us to grow in spiritual life, we need association of devotees. Going back to the point of this gossip mongering this morning, which we talked in depth about, which was so much in it. What is the person on the receiving end of this gossip mongering, which starts small, grows, and grows internationally? Which is something which is occurring, has occurred, and I'm sure will in the future. What is the person on the receiving end of this gossip mongering? Correct way of responding to distorted truths and things which are not actually clear, because by the time information passes from one to the tenth person, it's totally changed from its original context. So you're getting something which is not the real occurring problem in the first instance. So how is that person supposed to deal with that, for one? And secondly, is this Vaishnava apparatus being committed and practiced? It's got many questions I would like to ask you on this point also. It is said that as people grow older, they come to a midlife crisis. In spiritual life, is there such an occurrence, and when does it happen?
I've heard things spoken in these points, and I'd like to know that. And you will. As far as when untrue rumors are circulating amongst the Vaishnava community, and they are about ourselves,
yes.
That's what you're asking.
Yes.
There's two important considerations. One is our own personal purification, and one is the sanctity of the community. From the point of view of our own purification, we should know that however bad people talk about us, it helps us to become very humble and free from desire for prestige, even though it's painful. But as we were explaining this morning, when you have a boil and it's full of pus and someone touches it, let's just see if it squeezes it, it hurts very bad. But if there's no pus, a person can pinch that same place and it doesn't hurt at all. Right? So why does things said against us hurt so much? Because the poisonous pus of false ego is still in our consciousness. And if by the inconceivable arrangement of the Lord, someone is squeezing that poison out, let it come out, we should welcome the opportunity. That's for ourselves. But when these lying rumors are circulating, it's actually very terrible for the community to have to believe these things, especially if it's not true. And if we know it's not true, not for the purpose of self-defense, but for the purpose of serving other Vaishnavas, by not having them have to be contaminated by these, by believing things against a devotee that are not true, we have every, it is our service to try to clarify the situation according to our capacity. That would be the most perfect state in which, of consciousness, in which to deal with it. Lord Chaitanya's teachings is we should not defend our ego as a matter of self-defense. We should accept abuse. But for the sake of serving others from having to hear pollution, we can, in an honest way, reveal the truth about the misunderstanding that has taken place. And ultimately, we have to leave the rest to Krishna. Does that answer that question?
Yes. Also, just after this question, I also want to ask you, Is it also a reflection of the person who's spreading this gossip as to what is going on internally with the defense mechanism somehow that is being put out?
Often it is. And there is a saying, we should hate the diseased, but we should hate the diseased, but not the diseased. If a person is saying painful things about other Vaishnavas, we should understand that it is a disease within that person's heart. We should not hate the person, but we should hate the disease that is investing this desire to criticize others. And we have those inclinations within our own heart also. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, before pointing out the fault in another, I should examine the 50,000 faults I have in myself. So we also have that tendency. But we should try, as far as possible, to clarify misconceptions for the sake of maintaining a sanctified atmosphere amongst devotees. If untrue things are being said about you and it's actually an impediment to your devotional service, then for the sake of service, you should try to clarify the issue. But deep down internally, the ideal is to say yes. If they only knew how bad I was, they would be saying so many worse things. This person is actually flattering me compared to what I really am. I take this as praise and glorification. And as far as midlife crisis, we have seen that sometimes this happens. When we talk about midlife crisis amongst devotees, it's a very testing period in a devotee's life. Because when devotees are very young and enthusiastic, they really feel that I've transcended my body, I'm liberated. But when the body starts going over the peak of youth and starts going downhill, we realize that I'm getting old. My limbs are aching, my eyes don't work so much, and then we start thinking in terms of material security, like we never thought before. Huh? That's the tendency. It's a natural tendency. Not only in devotees' lives, but in everyone's life in this world. When we're young, we really don't need anything. But when our body starts falling apart a little and we start getting older, then we start thinking, I actually need so many things to preserve and to maintain this body. And then we start becoming very concerned with these things. And that's where the midlife crisis comes in. Then instead of thinking in terms of how much I can do for Krishna, we're worrying so much about our security for the future, how I will survive as I get older and older. Where will I live? What income will I have? Who will protect me? Of course, if you have great faith in Krishna, then you can overcome this tendency. But at this particular time of life, it's a great testing. The inclination is to very much come to the bodily conception of life again. And therefore, especially at this time of life, we have to have very, very strong association with advanced devotees. And we have to seek shelter of them. And especially at this time of the life, we have to be very, very careful that our sadhana is most essential now than ever before. Because actually, this time of life, you're actually coming closer to death when you need Krishna the most. And it's the time when our inclination is to turn away from Krishna and by our own material efforts try to create a better situation for our body. The two are diametrically opposed to one another. So it really is a crisis. So we should try to create a devotional society around us which can help people when they come to this midlife crisis. People need help at that time. The help of inspiring them to actually seek deeper detachment, deeper sadhana, and deeper association, rather than taking shelter of material facilities. In our movement, we have seen that this is a very serious matter. But in every spiritual movement, throughout the world, it is a very serious matter. in the Varnashram system, as you get older, you become more and more detached. But in the society around us today, as you get older, you become more attached. Very dangerous. In the Varnashram system, when you're 50 years old, you leave your family behind, you put on tree bark, and you go into the jungle. Right? But in our society of devotees, we're living like that when we're young, and when we get to 50, then we want to buy a house and some property and have a nice hot shower and nice clothes and a big bank account with interest and a trust fund and everything else. life insurance too, yes. So we have to somehow or other, individually as well as collectively, create an atmosphere where devotees do not fall victim to that type of consciousness. Whereas they progress in spiritual life, as soon as when they come to this midlife crisis of in their 40s, 50s, they should actually be striving for greater detachment. And that takes good association. It takes a very trusting atmosphere within the society of devotees, and it takes very, very good sadhana, and a lot of encouragement for good sadhana. We shouldn't blame devotees if they can't do it. In many cases, it's because the atmosphere around us is not conducive. Because we need the strength. We need the strength of the atmosphere around us to do it at that time of life. So we have to really work hard to create that. It may be difficult, but it's essential. There's no other way. We can't do it ourselves. We need support. Yes?
How important is this for the economy?
It is all important. It is all important. And it can be done if we just put emphasis on that. In my experience throughout the years of this movement, whatever is emphasized is achieved. Wherever I've seen an emphasis on making big money is made. Wherever I see the emphasis on distributing a lot of books, a lot of books are distributed. Wherever I've seen emphasis in the preaching on doing wonderful deity worship is achieved. When there's emphasis on good sadhana, practically everyone will have good sadhana. Where there's emphasis on loving, serving Vaishnav relationships with proper etiquette, devotees develop loving, proper etiquette in relationships with each other. What we emphasize in our preaching is what will be achieved. The problem is that these very essential factors of Krishna consciousness are by and large not emphasized at all. And therefore devotees just don't take it seriously. They don't want to hear about. Haribo. Huh? Anyways, we are Daiva Varnashram. Varnashram is natural. There are various orders of life in ashrams, in occupational duties. But the most important factor is that these varnas and ashrams are all centered and focused around the principle of devotional service to Krishna. And the Vaishnava etiquette that we are speaking of is the basis by which we can establish any aspect of Krishna conscious philosophy amongst each other. Huh? If we don't trust each other, how can we establish anything with any enthusiasm? Hmm? So, this must be very much emphasized. What it means to be a devotee in relationship to other devotees. Lord Chaitanya emphasized that the essence of Varnashram is to identify oneself with being the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, and that's all. Huh? We have to come together on that principle and deal with one another on that, with each other on that principle, and then Varnashram and everything will naturally be possible.
Hmm? Can you really say that a little bit at all?
About what? Varnashram? They are already living it in a perverted way. They have their warriors, they have their politicians, they have their priests and their educators, they have their farmers, they have their laborers. Huh? It's there, but it's not centered around Krishna. It's not organized according to spiritual principles. Yes? We have to examine our own hearts very carefully. What Srila Prabhupada has given us is so perfect and pure. And previously, we may have accepted it in essence, as the most wonderful thing we've ever found in life, even though certain aspects were inconceivable to us. Huh? Because we wanted to love Krishna. But when various material motives come into our life, then we look for a justification of not surrendering to Krishna, not loving Krishna. So those same factors, which were inconceivable, but didn't bother us much at all before because we wanted so much to surrender Krishna, they become the most perfect excuse why not to surrender to Krishna. And then we want to look for other alternatives. But whatever alternative you find, there'll be inconceivable factors in every alternative. Huh? Because that's what spiritual life is all about. There's certain inconceivable factors beyond our sense perception. And when the time comes when we don't want to surrender to that principle of religion, we'll justify not surrendering to that because of certain things that we're not willing to accept. Hmm? So, my humble advice is, you've been given something wonderful. and you've gone so far with it. Search your heart. Why all of a sudden these things are causing us so much problems to leave when they didn't in the past? It must be because our desire to serve, our desire to purify ourselves, our desire to perform sacrifice isn't what it used to be. And now we're using this as an excuse.